Today, my guest is a trailblazer. She's a woman behind the No More Page Three movement and a successful romantic fiction writer. She decided, after quite a few disappointing wanks, to get into sex. We're not talking porn or multiple partners. She wanted to find slow, beautiful sex. She is Leslie Ann Holmes, and her book is Don't Hold My Head Down in Search of Some Brilliant Fucking. God, I've never said that before. I love it. I'm going to say it again.
Okay.
Hold my head down in search of some brilliant fucking. Hello! And welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you for having me.
You're so, so welcome. So, please, can you tell us about the defining moment which started you on your sexual adventure?
Yes, I had an epiphany whilst wanking to online pornography, as you do. I was a little bit horny one night. I had a bit of a crush on someone and I'd had a little drink and I took myself home, just me and the laptop. And actually what happened was I was in one of the big free porn sites and I saw a thumbnail picture of what looked like a girl, to be honest. There was a sex act being done to her, and I'm sure she was of a legal age, but she did look really young. And yeah, something about seeing that picture just shook me, and I turned my computer off and I found I was sat there worrying about this young woman I'd never met. And, you know, I'd had all these lovely feelings of arousal, taken them to porn, and then suddenly I was closed my computer and just feeling, yeah, really quite sad. And I just got thinking, really. I had nieces, I've got four nieces, and one of them at the time was 13, 14, I think. And I just kept thinking about her, curious about her sexual awakening, all these amazing sensations going on in her body, going to online pornography as I had done and seeing all this stuff. And I just kept thinking, oh, that's really sad. This is the sex we're giving our young people. And I started sort of, you know, doing other searches and trying to find alternatives. And
you wrote in the words beautiful sex.
I did, yeah. One of the searches was beautiful sex. And it's the one I really remember because I got a video of a woman giving a man a blowjob whilst he held her head down. And then I got offers of other clips. One was called Daddy Loves to Hate Fuck Jap Schoolgirl, and I thought, oh my god, you know,
where's the romance? I mean, that's a word, but one of the things you come across quite quickly is you say this is designed for men.
Yes, so it's designed
that's
for
what
men
porn is designed for men,
yeah. As well. And I think, you know, going forward and talking about the sort of sexual journey I went on, what I realised is that actually all the representations of female sexuality that I'd ever, you know, learnt from or that had ever been shown to me had all been created by men. So I felt when I was younger, Page Three very much affected me because it was just there in my house every day. You know, then you go to Lazmags, porn, all these versions of female sexuality
you
presented
were really,
by men.
You're the age group that literally Lazmags were absolutely at their peak.
When I was at uni, yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Well, so terrible time, actually, wasn't it?
You had to be up for it.
Oh, no.
Yeah, no, it was great. But then, you know, online porn, that, you know, that taught me really, I think, about the performance side of sex.
Now, that's what I loved, actually, that you described sex before. Can you tell us, before you discovered beautiful slow sex, which is what you decided to find, what is a typical night with you getting off with somebody, Lucy, please?
Well, first of all, I would be very drunk. Yeah. So what I realised is that I was very insecure about my body, how I looked, and I also didn't have much confidence in talking to men. Definitely couldn't ask for what I wanted. And in order for me to get anywhere with men, I had to be very, very drunk because it would give me some sort of sense of confidence. So, you know, it's already going to be quite disastrous, isn't it? But then what I found is if things were, you know, if adult fun was going to be on the table, it tended to follow a bit of a formula, and I call it normal, slightly porny sex. Yeah, which is a bit of kissing, bit of fingering, blowjob, him on top, me on top, bit from behind, he comes done. That was the kind of formula.
And it's also it's always rushed, isn't it?
Oh yeah, definitely.
You know, there's no time for warm up in a way. It's very kind of. Sex is sort of, it's also kind of panic moment. Yeah, you're both drunk.
It feels like you're racing to get somewhere.
You also can't When you're drunk, for a start, you can't feel your body.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you're what I mean, what foreplay was there really? You know, apart from laughing at some jokes and having a few pints.
Well, I always remember the and this is something again. You know, it's not till I really started to think about all this. So there would be kissing, and then things would move on, and they would either move on from one of two things. And one of those things would be your hand in the knickers. And the other thing would be my hand moved onto his penis.
Very early on then.
Yeah, well, you know, a bit of kissing, but then there would be. And if I think back, you know, that has happened to me many, many times, that hand being moved onto the penis from quite a young age. And when I talk to other women, that's happened to them. And what, you know, what I found so interesting is that I had never once said, no, I do know where it is. I'll get to it when I'm ready. I just, you know, I think I was very passive. Sex was something that was more or less done to me. And I was willing, keen, but I wasn't directing the show. I wasn't shaping what happened. So it was very interesting to get to my 30s and sort of unpick all this and go, right, I don't want to do things the way I've always done them. My friend has this great expression, if you always do what you've always done, you always get what you've always got. And I was like, I don't want this.
Did you ever have an orgasm with a man? I mean, as in from sexual intercourse?
Well, I don't know whether I had a vaginal.
I've never had one. Yeah. No.
I don't know whether I did through intercourse, but I definitely had clitoral.
What, when they kissed you between the legs?
Yeah, it could be. Yeah. Sometimes I go to fantasy, but yes, I did. You know, I was always able to...
come.
You know, I say always able to. I remember trying to teach myself to come. Like when I was, I think I was 18 and I had... and I'd already had sex. You know, I had sex at 14. And
that's
then at
really
18,
young.
I was trying to learn to masturbate. And I remember locking myself in a bathroom and a friend being outside the bathroom, and I was going, where is it? What do I do? What do you do? You know, like getting these instructions.
Think about it, the way round it should be, which is, I was the same. I'd never, ever felt between my legs. A man was the first one to do it to me.
Yeah.
And it's like, in a way, we should get all our daughters, children, nieces, as you say, to say no, have a good feel, find out what is pleasure, and then you can tell somebody what to do. And it's the opposite way around to...
Yeah.
Because I thought touch between your legs was a bad thing to do, dirty and bad. How did you feel about it?
Well, I think this thing of, you know, the shame, and we just have to really remember that women have been shamed for sex for hundreds and hundreds and thousands of years.
Because men have projected their shame onto us?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, we've had... And I think, you know, if you look at... what I couldn't get over is, you know, if you look at the Bible and there's texts in the Old Testament that's, you know, say, you know, if she's not a virgin, you know, stone her. You know, she can be stoned outside her father's house. I mean, there's absolute advocating holy men in holy books advocating... violence against women.
So
you know,
because a man feels sexual towards a woman, he says it's your fault.
Yeah, and this still goes on. You know, we still have it. So there's so much.
Yeah, because
you know,
if your boyfriend or husband or partner or whatever it was had a relationship with somebody else, you'd hate the other person. You know, oh God, you know, or they'd be called a man hater, man. They broke up the marriage. They're a vamp. They're a whore. They're a bitch. You know.
Yeah. So women do it as well. You know, it's so normalised. You know, that that women do it, against other women all the time. It's so sad, I think. I mean, you know, we know the fact that, you know, we've got millions and millions and millions of girls and women alive today who've undergone female genital mutilation, that we know that, you know, this is a world that's terrified of female sexuality and has been for a long, long time.
Do you think there was a time in history, have you found it, when I suppose the Kama Sutra, you know, they knew what they were doing?
Yeah, I wish I knew more about the history. I mean, I do find what I've been, you know, connecting with and enjoying connecting with is that, you know, I went to a Catholic convent. So, you know, I did grow up with a very Christian upbringing. And, you know, as I think, and this Christianity is, you know, and religion is around us very much in the fabrics of our society even still. And what I've been recently doing actually is trying to reconnect to what I'd call as a goddess loving ancestors, because it hasn't always been, you know, patriarchal Christianity.
Exactly, the first piece of art found in the world is a woman with a big bottom.
Yeah.
So men were into women and women were into being big bottomed, which means that you're kind of enjoying your body, aren't you?
What I think, yeah, and what I think is so interesting is that, so we, you know, it's so sad, but we, so, you know, women, if we do talk about connecting with the goddess, loving ancestors, they were, you know, there were women who were connected to their bodies, connected to the land, to nature, and where sex wasn't, it wasn't dirty, it wasn't shameful, it was actually a way of connecting to a divine. And so what we then have with, you know, what Christianity did is, you know, it gave us a Virgin Mary to worship, you know, somebody who actually had a child but even so hadn't had sex. You know, sex was so dirty, it was something that we weren't supposed to do or enjoy. And I just think, how much has that messed us up? And the fact it's come from church, the fact it's come from religion, from spirituality, I think it's so sad because, you know, for women or for me, like how I, you know, how I live spiritually and how I explore my sexuality is really hugely part of me. And if you think that we've had sort of outside controls of law and religion telling us, you know, holding us against these things and away from these things, just think it's just desperately sad.
It is, it is. So you started off, what was your first steps? You, in the book, you are hilarious in the book, by the way. You're fantastic. You talk about being so British, you know, you're ashamed, you're ashamed of your bum, you're embarrassed about this, you know, you're not a kind of group type, you know, which we all think we're not, you know, we're not the strip off and run around confident type, you know, we are literally, British people are particularly opposite of that, you know, we're very private people. Yeah. Who are shy, especially physically. And that's probably why we have to get drunk all the time, yes, like you're saying. But what was the first thing you did then to kind of get to break out of this kind of Britishness you have?
Okay, so I wrote a big list, first of all, about what all the things I wanted to explore. And as you said, one of them was to experience really slow sex because I felt it had all been tied up in these routines, hurried routines. And then there was exploring my own pleasure, so exploring different types of orgasm. Also, I had a hand job phobia, so I wanted to, like, I felt I'd been winging it when it came to a penis, and I really wanted to work out how and where to touch a man. I really wanted to get confident in that area. And there were other things on the list. But anyway, the first thing, and what I did is, you know, I felt like this sexual pioneer. There I was one day, I had a chocolate eclair, a cup of tea, pen and paper. I made a big sex list, you know, I was off. And then I was like, oh, right, shit, should probably have thought of this before, but I need a fella, or I need someone to do this with. And that was really interesting.
So were you single at the time?
I was single at the time, yeah. And I didn't really know what I was going to suggest. But then I got quite inspired because a friend of mine had been approached by a guy who was a massage therapist and asked if she wanted to do some tantric exercises with her, tantric sex exercises. And I was like, oh, well, this sounds like something. I didn't know much about tantric sex. I just knew that Sting and Trudy Styler did it and you had to take the piss out of it because there had been lots of sort of piss-taking articles about it.
7 hours sessions. Yeah,
which I did think, even though I did want slow sex, that did feel quite extreme. So anyway, I downloaded The Idiot's Guide to Tantric Sex and I thought I would ask a fella if he fancied doing some with me. And I did. I found this guy and I thought, right, I'm going to ask this guy if he wants to do some tantric sex exercises with me. And oh my God. And I was, you know, it happened. It was at midnight. We were at a bus stop together. And I was just, I was so embarrassed. I'd never asked for what, you know, something like this. I'd never propositioned a guy in this way. And you know, he was a nice guy, and I could barely speak. I went really red. I started to sweat. All these weird sounds were coming out of my mouth. And I literally think I propositioned a guy by demonstrating the symptoms of anaphylactic shock in front of him. And I eventually got the words out. Do you want to do some tantric sex with me like this? And then I was just like, oh my God, I was just so, and I literally ran home then going, oh my God, repeatedly. Didn't even hear what he'd said. I mean, it was just ridiculous. And he had actually said he wanted to do it with me, but I'd just thrown myself. But it really got me thinking. You know, I was an actress at the time. Speaking was what I did, you know. And there was I. And I'd started writing at that point. I'd had books published. And yet I could not ask a really nice guy a simple question without just behaving like this.
With the word sex in it.
With the word sex in it. And that really got me thinking. And I realised that actually this wasn't just a one-off incident. This was my modus operandi. This was just how I'd always been. I'd always found it really hard to ask for what I wanted. And this, for me, was one of the biggest revelations of the book, actually, how I had grown up and sort of learnt to be passive when it came to men and sex. And the saddest thing...
Was that a role model thing? Or what
I think it was probably a lack of role models thing. So we don't really have, you know,
what about
empowered...
your relationship with your father?
Or, my mum and dad are great. They are, you know, they're still together after many, many years. There is a kind of patriarchal relationship, you know, like a lot of, you know, my dad is the, you know, the one who, you know, did well at business and, you know, has sort of financially supported my mum, and my mum has done brilliantly with looking after the home and the kids and what have you. And that's, and but there is a sort of, you know, my dad is sort of the alpha male, if you like, and it is that sort of, and that works for them. So I don't in any way want to knock it. But I don't think it was just that. I think it was just, I think that played a part, but I think there were other influences that, you know, just constantly reiterating that. The 1950s housewife is a really, I think, a strong archetype, or has been. Mm-hmm. But also in terms of sex particularly, you know, page three for me was a prime example of, here is, in a paper, in a newspaper full of pictures of men doing stuff, there is a picture of a woman standing there in her pants for men to look at. And that was such a big, you are there to be desired. You are there, how you look and your body has to be desired by, and your bosoms are there to be desired by men. But you're not hearing what she's not telling you what she wants. She's not telling you what she desires. And I think for me, that's how I had grown up, just thinking, oh God, I hate my body because it doesn't, you know, it's, my boobs are there.
You talk about your bum. You didn't like your bum.
All my boobs. And I just, you know, because it's, you know, your body was supposed to be there for men to look at and mine fell short. That's just what I'd always thought. But I'd never asked myself what I desired. And I think that's such a key thing, that we're so much, you know, we're so raised to be desired that we don't think about what we desire. So that was really, you know, because I'm just writing this sex list in my mid-30s going, does strike me as a bit odd. I've never really done this before. Thought, what do I want to explore? What do I want to experience? I'm a big list writer, so I don't know why I hadn't done it.
So what was the first thing? You're right, so you found the guy at the bus stop. He said yes. Did anything happen with him?
Yeah, we got the book out. I had to get really drunk in order to, you know, to suggest anything. And then I thought I'd give him a lingam massage. So lingam is the word for penis in tantra. And it was awful. I was so drunk anyway. And I was holding a book and trying to give this poor bloke a hand job. And yeah, it was disastrous. And anyway, so then we just sort of had normal, slightly porny sex, you know. And I was like, oh God, Lucy, you know. That's just not the sort of trailblazing start I wanted. So, and then he finished with me. He said, oh, you know, he didn't want to do it anymore. And then I behaved, rather than just go, oh yeah, fair enough. I went, I just had to drink all the special price cocktails, and I wailed and wailed all night on a step whilst I ate a burger, and just sort of then berated myself for days after. So I was like, oh my God, Lucy, do you know what I mean? It's supposed to be, you know, I was a relatively successful woman in my 30s, and yet, you know, a guy had said he didn't want to sort of, you know, make out with me, and I
took the rejection back.
So badly. So that really made me think. So I, you know, I kept kind of encountering these disasters, but going, this is an interesting response. What's going on here? And I think that's how I found feminism, really. I didn't know much about feminism before. Definitely probably wouldn't have said I was a feminist. I didn't know much about it, but I found feminism very quickly by exploring my sexuality.
So, tell us about the kind of feeling yourself, because you discovered something about the bosoms, which a lot of people won't know about, because I didn't know about it.
What did you not know about the bosoms?
Well, I didn't know that, as you say in the book, get somebody or yourself to caress your bosoms for about 30 minutes without touching the nipple or the, don't know what it's called, the brown bit in the middle, brownie pink. Don't do that. Just feel and feel. In fact, I'm touching them now. Round and round and round. Cup them, caress them, do anything you like with them. But then feel down there between your legs. And I did this on Saturday, and I got someone, my partner, to do it. And he said, I've never, ever felt you so open between your legs in my life. And I had never felt sensations, and I'm 55, like I felt when he, you know, after this. So I just, this is slow sex, and it's so easy.
How lovely. I'm so glad you had that experience.
It's so easy, though, and I'm dying to do it again. You know?
Lovely.
And, you know, and we got talking about it, and we thought, well, maybe in the 1950s, when a man would literally touch your bosoms for like 2 hours, you know what I mean? And then they might sort of, he might put his hand down your pants or something when you're engaged, obviously. But imagine they probably, because they had real slow sex, where we've all learned fast sex because of the 70s and the sexual revolution. Maybe they had it. They did have better sex than us, you know, our grandparents and our...
Because they had all that build up and they explored it. Yes, I think, you know, I think a lot of times when we delay things, you know, I think that, you know, we kind of, you know, we spoke about this sort of, how we're always sort of, we're almost chasing an orgasm, aren't we? And we're trying to get to the next place. You know, we race ahead. But that's life, you know, look at our lives. We're always racing ahead, aren't we? You know, we're soundbite, we're quick. I am so glad you had that experience. So when I was realising, I got very sad when I realised that I had hated my boobs for so long. You know, really.
Why did
made
you
me
hate
sad.
Them?
Well, I think I just, when I traced it back, it made me sadder actually, because I realised that I'd hated them from the moment they arrived. And that was just because I was comparing them to Page 3 and they didn't look like Page 3. And I was like, oh shit, you know, my boobs are there for men to look at. That's just what I thought. And mine don't look, you know, look good for men to look at. So I just had shame and I just carried it with me, never even thought about it. This was like my shame thing. You know, I kind of felt sorry for men if they had to see my boobs, and I'd never asked them to spend more time touching them, even though I knew I loved them being touched. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I didn't know. Because I wasn't such, I'll just let you know, but because again, I had small bosoms. So I'd always thought, well, they're not sexy because they're small. So I'd never bothered with them. So 55 years later, I have. But carry on about you.
I really tried to apologise to my boobs and to love them and I said I was sorry, and I just thought, God, you're so sensitive, and you know, you've got the capacity to feed a child. I mean, that's fucking amazing. I don't know why I've been beating up on you. And and I read something actually in a book about Tantra, in a lovely book by Diana Richardson, and it was about how men and women have positive sexual poles and they're different. And the woman's is around her breasts and it's her heart area. And I thought that was really lovely. It's like your
heart. It's really interesting because I went to India in the autumn and I met a yogi, and he said, we do have, because I was asking about the chakras, and he said, women have one on each bosom.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. So that is, that, you know, and it's linked. So we're very linked to our breasts. So everybody just get feeling.
Yeah,
you know, this is we can celebrate our bosoms.
Yeah, but a man's positive sexual pole is his penis. And so what happens is, I think, you know, for me, when it came to sex, if someone just went straight there to my, you know, to my vulva vagina area, it just felt like a smear test. Felt nothing, you know. Whereas, you know, taking your time building that energy around my heart, my breasts, my nipples. Oh. Just lovely. Yeah, I'm so glad you had that experience.
No, it's absolutely fantastic. No, really good. So you found, through tantric sex and everything, you found a partner, which you called, he was a bell tent man, because you met him at a kind of sex festival in Dorset.
I did, yes.
Found very intriguing.
Oh, no, actually, I went to a sex festival in Dorset with him, but I met him at another festival. Yes, not in Dorset. But
he was someone that was really into everything that you were exploring. So this was so exciting for you.
Yeah, really lovely. Really lovely. And that was a big thing for me, because all the way along I had disastrous things with men, because I found it really hard to ask for what I wanted or to say what I really wanted. And by that point, by the time I'd met my partner, I was so much more, I was gaining in confidence, and I was able to say that, you know, I was on a bit of a journey and I wanted to do this and I wanted to do that. And so when we met, I was like, oh, I'd like to explore that. Do you fancy doing it? So it was really great. Yeah.
And he wanted the same.
He wanted the same, yeah.
Now, what I'm interested in, a man who is into Tantra, you know, because are they the sort of people that wear harem pants and have long frizzy hair and a guitar around their back? You know, be honest.
No, well, they can be, but he looks quite normal.
Okay. I'm just scared that they are the kind of the non-alpha men, you know what I mean? And that's what sort of puts me off about, you know.
Interesting. There's a combination of, a combination of men, like you would in any way. And But what is quite nice is that a lot of people, or a lot of men I'd met doing that, like my partner had, you know, he'd been on a whole sex journey, so he wasn't...
I don't know why he would do it.
He wasn't grabby, or he wasn't, you know, he wasn't, he was very, he really took his time with me, really had, had sort of learned a lot about his pleasure, female pleasure. He wasn't...
But what inspired him, though, to, you know, I'm interested from a male point of view. Because obviously a woman, we're not getting satisfaction. Whereas a man, you know, do they not get it?
So I think there's... so I can't talk too much about his journey because it's not my... Because I'll only be like, oh no, sorry, should I not have said that? Yeah. So, but I think for a lot of people, the same way that we're pulled to anything, really. But also what I think... Because lots of people have said... It's quite interesting, people's response to reading the book, because some people have been like, well, you know, it's all fine, you want to slow sex and, you know, to orgasms and stuff, but when it's group sex and sex festivals, that's just awful. And, you know, and I wouldn't, you know, I feel people have a vision of them that isn't true to them. So what I really responded to was what's called the conscious sexuality scene. So it wasn't, it was very much... how can I explain it? Actually, I found it really spiritual, really healing, really cathartic. So if you take Tantra, for example, Tantra's not all about sex. It's more about the fact that there are different ways to enlightenment. And one of them is meditation, but one of them is also working with sexual energy. And so when you do, or when I went to the sex festival, that was a 5-day long festival, and it attracted probably the best teachers from around the country, and if not the world, to come and do workshops in Tantra, in intimacy, in boundary setting, in introductions to kink, you know, in learning to, you know, state boundaries, explore different, you know, toys maybe. There are all sorts of things, movement, lots of dance, loads of dance and movement. And actually what you find is it's, I think we have an image that will be quite base.
Yes.
In our heads.
Yeah, we do. I think and it's sort not of that. I went to kind of rubber parties in the 80s. Sort of think of that.
Yeah. Mm. So these this wasn't like that. And there might be a bit of it,
you know. Was it not too dippy hippy? That's what I'm scared of.
Yeah, so the 5-day one was quite dippy hippy, I would say. But actually if you probably took a photo of it, you go, oh my god, that's dippy hippy. But if you're in it, I don't know, it's just a load of people exploring that side of themselves. And actually, I found something just quite something quite beautiful about people, because you have to lay yourself quite vulnerable to go to some of these workshops and do that. And the whole first day was all about, like, the teachers will say it's not safe unless people can say no. And there will be lots of repetition in learning to state your boundaries, learning to tune into what you really want. And if you don't want someone near you, you give a loving no. And then there's a whole kind of thing about learning to take that loving no, because it's that person looking after themselves, and that's okay, you know. So there's a lot about this sort of stuff, which was just brilliant.
So that means that it makes you more... The whole idea of sex is you can only have good sex if you relax. So if you've got fantastic boundaries up, your vagina and your bosoms, it can relax, because it's the fear factor that makes you kind of hardened and not enjoy things.
Yeah, and it means that you can... If you know how to give your clear no, and... It means that you can really give a really enthusiastic yes when you want to. I really loved... and I think I had this thought that I wanted to go to a sex party, and that was in my original list. I had this image of a sex party in nature. Nature was really key in it. I didn't want it in some sort of sweaty club in London. I wanted it to be in kind of the open air. Anyway, and then when I did go to my first sort of sex party, and it wasn't out in nature, but it was in a... stately home, there was lots of nature around, so I'll call it
lovely.
That. It was beautiful, and it wasn't a... it was a lovely... And I think I'd worried about how I would be there, and actually I felt quite in my power, and it was lovely to be allowed to be sensual. And sometimes it's not all about... most of the time it's not all about penetration, it's about a soft touch, a little kiss, a little whisper. You know, these things, there's an eroticism, a sensuality that... can be so divine. So it's not all about that. I think we have this base, you know, if you go to a sex party, you have to have sex with 12 people, and you don't. So my experience of sex festivals and sex parties were, very, very lovely. Actually.
And positive. Been back to any more since?
Well, I had a baby.
I think that goes with, you know, if you have a lot of sex people out there, it might happen.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I was having this great sex and I got pregnant.
With Belle Tent?
Yes, with Belle Tent Man. So which is all in the book. And he has actually since, but I haven't been to anywhere like that.
I think when you've had a baby, it's sort of quite low on the list.
Yeah and also because this the 5-day sex festival, it was really funny when I went to it, because I started off and I was a bit like, oh my god, this is terrifying, I don't want to be here, and I locked myself in the car at that first night. But then by 24 hours later, I was saying, I want to come here every year. It's so lovely to just really celebrate and explore my sensuality. And that's what I want to do. And it's such an important part of me. But then the next year, I had a baby. I was very pregnant. Yes, I was giving birth, I think. So didn't go that year. And actually now I don't really, it's no children at these festivals. So I don't really want to be away from my little one for 5 days. So yeah, so that's not for now. Yeah.
It is the most entertaining book I've read so far. I mean, okay, we're quite early on in 2019, but I really feel like I got to know you. I loved your voice. I found you friendly, amusing, desperately honest. If people want to discover sexuality without, from a woman's point of view, which is warm, friendly, and a safe journey, I really, really recommend your book. Thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous today.
I've loved being on Radio Gorgeous. Thank you for having me.
So hold my head down.
Don't hold my head down.
Don't. Sorry. That's very
But if you
funny.
Want me, don't. Yeah.
Don't hold my head down. In Search of Some Brilliant Fucking is published by Unbound. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Lucy, for coming on and sharing your intimate details.
And you. Thank you.
For more amazing women, always go to Radio Gorgeous.